Just in time for Mother's Day, we've got news for moms. According to a new survey by analytics website WalletHub, Idaho ranks as the worst place to live for working moms. The study noted that more than 70% of moms with young children are working, and women make up nearly half of the U.S. workforce. Here in Idaho, women make up 54% of the workforce, despite comprising only 49% of our population. WalletHub looked at three categories made up of 15 metrics to rank each of the 50 states and Washington, D.C. Idaho basically tanked in two of those categories, ranking 51st in childcare and 48th in professional opportunities. Even though our state was 20th for work-life balance, that was not enough to salvage our overall score. WalletHub went on to note that Idaho has the worst daycare in the country, as well as the second lowest ratio of female executives to male executives. Those metrics gave Idaho a score of 31 out of a possible 100. Joining me today to talk about what this study really means and if there's anything that we can do to make changes are Idaho District 19 Representative Alana Rubel, Associate you're District 18, aren't you? That was my mistake.
No worries.
You know what? That's what happens when you don't pre-read some of your scripts once in a while. And I wrote it myself. Associate Professor of Sociology for Boise State University, Sharon Patterson, and Audrey Eldridge, Director of Marketing and Communication of the College of Western Idaho. I'd like to welcome all of you to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I would like to start with a question for all of you. Were you surprised by this study?
I was not surprised. I think they hit a lot of the right metrics. It was a very broad study where they looked at a lot of the different facets that impact your ability to successfully be a working mom and be happy in that role. And they covered the gamut. They covered, you know, childcare, education, healthcare access, professional advancement possibilities. And I think they rightly called us out on a lot of those factors. We really have some big problems in those areas. We're one of only a handful of states that doesn't have early childhood education. We have virtually no regulation of our daycare quality. We are one of the few states that haven't expanded Medicaid to cover the gap. And a lot of those in the gap are working parents. We have underfunded educational opportunities across the board. I think we were rightly called out, and I hope it stimulates some change in those areas.
And Sharon, being a sociology professor, mm-hmm. and I know some of your work looks at pay equity. Mm-hmm. Talk about that. Was that surprising when you saw this study and where we rank?
No, not at all. In particular, women tend to occupy the low-wage work in the service industry. And so there's that connection between access to childcare and wages. So those go hand in hand. Also, there's kind of a notion where of, you know, what's the ideal worker? And so that also can be gendered, if you will, so that the ideal worker often assumes that there's somebody at home taking care of the household. Some of the attributes that we think of in terms of leaders tend to represent not women's work, if you will, and might represent more masculine kinds of work.
That's stereotypical when
right,
we
exactly,
think of those.
Exactly.
And then, Audrey, I thought you brought up a good point off the mic earlier, was how you have been able to manage that term work-life balance. But you talked about the fact that for years you worked part-time.
Mm-hmm.
How has that affected, you know, how you've moved forward in your career?
I would say that's almost, for me, it was the best case scenario where I could still stay in the workforce and keep my career going, yet have and allow for more time at home. But I also think for me, the study as a working mom, it really validates that it is challenging. And for someone to do a study to say it is hugely challenging, I thought, yeah, that's right. It was really disappointing how Idaho ranked, but it was
but a validation. That's interesting to mm-hmm. say that it's almost like I'm not crazy.
Exactly. Yes. This is a challenge. And here it states. Right. Definitely.
So, Alana, I want to get back to some of the points that you made. And because I want to talk about government.
Yeah.
Local government, state government. I think a lot of times we put the onus on federal government. We talk
right.
about family leave, things like that.
Right.
Does all of it fall on the federal government?
Well, we're 50th in the nation, and the same federal government governs all 50 of those states. So I think we can pretty clearly infer from that there's something happening at our state level of government that is differentiating us in a bad way from our fellow states. And there are a lot of things. I mean, sitting here, I could tell you 10 things that the state could and should be doing that would materially improve life for working mothers
tell
that
me
they're
some
not
of,
doing.
Tell me some of those things that you think would make a difference?
Implementing early childhood education. That is just such an obvious thing we should be doing. I think we're one of maybe six states in the nation that doesn't have any system of public pre-K. That's essential. The lack of available childcare and quality childcare is a huge factor that keeps women out of the workplace and that makes it more difficult for those that are forced to enter the workplace. Closing the Medicaid gap. You know, by definition, a lot of those folks in the gap are people that are the working poor that aren't making quite enough money to land on the exchange. A big part of the reason why you might be working but not making quite enough money to land on the exchange is because you're a working parent and you can't work the kind of hours that it would take to earn enough money to get on the exchange. So you have these working moms that can't get health care. So that's a biggie right there. Regulating our daycare centers is a concern. I know we're worse than worst of the states. We're actually, I think, below Guam and Puerto Rico, if I understand. So we're not only behind all the other states, but a few
we're
territories
We're
going
to throw some
well.
Other territories in there to make us feel even better about this.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the issues was availability of healthcare providers, I think was one of the factors that they looked at. There was a recommendation that we undertake a program that promotes residencies to bring doctors to the state because we have one of the lowest
We
have a doctor shortage. There was a recommendation that we undertake a $16 million program to build residencies in the state to bring in doctors. They put in 1 million last session, but that's not going to get us where we need to go. I could go on all day.
You could go on all day. Yes.
There's a lot we could be doing.
We are speaking with Representative Alana Rubel, Associate Professor of Sociology at BSU, Sharon Patterson, and CWI Marketing and Community Director Audrey Eldridge about a new study that ranks Idaho as the worst place for working moms. If you would like to comment, if you have questions, email us at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. You can tweet us, KBSX 91.5, or go to our Facebook page, Boise State Public Radio. We will get to all of your comments because we've gotten a lot in our next segment, but we also want to continue this conversation. And Sharon, I wanted to ask you, when Alana talked about that, when about the working poor, do we see that in particular with women more than men in Idaho?
Yes, definitely. The jobs that are increasing and the jobs that exist are service sector. I mean, the projections are that they're going to increase by 5% compared to 2% in some of the other sectors. And primarily that is jobs that women occupy. So not only are they working at low wages, they're also working multiple jobs. So they're the folks that are working in the evenings or the folks that are picking up weekend shifts. Their schedules might be erratic. So that low wage, and also sometimes we look at comparable worth. So it's always interesting that we compare, you know, someone that maybe moves furniture or works in landscaping compared to childcare, we've, again, kind of going back to what we value. Sometimes the nature of the work is comparable, but the pay is not. So that factors in.
So do we need, Sharon, to see almost a societal shift, a change in how we view women in the workforce and men in the workforce and dads, frankly?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is a equality, access, parenting kinds of conversation for everyone to think about. How do we make a living wage? How do we have time to spend with our families? How do we have fulfilling lives? And so that question is broad-based. And for women, typically since we don't get paid for the work that we do at home, that kind of sprinkles into the same kind of work being, you know, devalued in the workplace. Because like, oh, that's easy to do. And, you know, why should we pay for that kind of work? So that mindset does contribute to that culture.
And that brings in a comment from Katie on Facebook. In fact, she said, and I'm quoting, that she said, I am sure there are times that I was looked over for a promotion because I needed to spend more time and protect time with my kids because I'm also the primary custody.
Yeah.
And then she went on to say that she changed careers because in her former career, she was given flexibility versus a pay increase. Do we see that across the board in the United States, Sharon? I would say that's not just an Idaho issue.
Yeah. One of the fun, I guess, concepts is the notion of a glass escalator. We hear about the glass ceiling. So we hear about the glass ceiling in terms of how that may limit women's mobility. But there's the glass escalator for men sometimes to say, oh, wow, you're celebrated for that parenting role or that flexibility. And the interesting thing about flexibility is that just means you sometimes work all the time, even though mm-hmm. You can step away from the job momentarily to do that parenting role.
Right. And Audrey, have you seen you have switched careers? Have you noticed better places for women to work in your time as a working woman?
I don't know if I would pinpoint it to the place you work or the mindset of the employer and the leadership of where you work and the idea of flexibility. But this conversation is interesting that it has to be a choice. Mm-hmm. You have to choose flexibility or pay, because mm-hmm. Flexibility is a must to have in the workplace. But it's unfortunate that it has to be a choice, because in order to have that flexibility and leave at 3 or come in at 8:30, if you know you're dealing with mm-hmm. children, you take work home with you, because of that. Mm-hmm. But you were so thankful for the flexibility, so it'd be great to see that it's not a choice or one or the other. And like I said, the mindset of the leadership, I think, is really where it lies.
We are continuing our conversation about a recent study ranking Idaho as the worst place to live for working moms. Happy Mother's Day about that. We have put a link on our website to the full study. So if you would like to read it, go to BoiseStatePublicRadio.org. My guests today are Idaho District 18 Representative Alana Rubel, BSU Associate Professor of Sociology Sharon Patterson, and CWI Director of Marketing and Communication Audrey Eldridge. We wrapped up the last segment with a comment from Boise listener Brittany, and I wanted to read that again if you were just joining us. She says, "We live in a culture that preaches health in a variety of ways, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, financial. Yet we are inundated with expectations. Work full time, get to the gym, cook meals at home, spend quality time with the kids, keep a clean house, be a loving and devoted partner if you're one, all the while saving for a vacation, emergencies, retirement, while not racking up debt. But women do not live in a culture that typically supports these narratives." When I read that, there was like a gut feeling that I was like, oh my gosh, she said everything that I think so many women feel. And Sharon, you were saying it goes beyond that, though, because of this second and third shift mm-hmm. mentality. Mm-hmm. Even if you are a working mom, you don't really have just one job.
Right. Right. So the second shift is the kind of classic, you get home, you still are going to cook, you're going to clean, you're going to put the kids to bed, give them baths. So that's kind of the notion of the second shift. And interesting, as women's participation in the workforce has gone up, their time taking care of the second shift hasn't gone down very much. So it's about 20 hours compared to men's going from 4 hours a week to 10 hours a week in about the last 50 years. So
the last 50 years?
Yeah. Hey. But the third shift is then all of that clutter, we need to pick them up from soccer, and whose birthday is it, and what am I going to get, and if I stop here at the store on the way home, and da-da-da. And so it's not mm-hmm. only the tasks, but all of that mental energy that's spent kind of taking care and attending to emotions mm-hmm. and schedule. So it's a lot.
And we were talking during our break about the fact that I think there are women that are lucky enough to have a choice to either work full-time, work part-time, you know, stay home and work with inside the house. However, that seems to be a smaller number than women that don't have the choice. So when we talk about that, because I think there is a perception that many women should stay home when the kids are little, a lot of women don't have that choice in Idaho. So, Alana, what needs to happen?
Well, I'm glad you flagged that, because I think this has been a real obstacle that we've encountered at the governmental level whenever we try to bring programs that would invest in things like early childhood education that would make it more feasible. And there's always this pushback of saying, well, you know, we see this idealized world where women are home and children are best at home with their mothers, and, you know, this vision of women home reading Dr. Seuss to their kids all day. And they're like, and they think, oh, if we create an early childhood care system, then we will be encouraging women to work and discouraging them from staying home with their kids, and we don't want to do that, so let's just not even have that discussion. But again, as you said, that's making a very fundamental assumption, which is very inaccurate, that there's a choice going on here, that women are in an economic position where they can say, you know, I think I'm just going to stay home and read Dr. Seuss to my kids. A whole lot of women are not in that boat. 67% of women in Idaho work and have to work. Mm-hmm. They need double income families, or sometimes the women are the sole wage earner. So I think it really is all it it's doing really is making life extra difficult for women that are in a necessity position of having to work.
Right.
So I think we need to bridge that gap of this extremely unrealistic, idealized vision. To me, it's actually that's not even an idealized vision necessarily. That may be some people's idealized vision that women should be home raising kids. That's not
ideal
for all women.
But it's not accurate. I think that's
But it's not an economic reality for women. It will not pay the mortgage. It will not pay the electric bills. It will not feed their families. And so we have to acknowledge the reality that they have to work and figure out how we can make them the most successful parents and make their kids the most successful kids within those parameters.
In fact, Sarah from Boise said this. She says, when I had my daughter, I was an unmarried single mom with $0 in child support. It was 2008 during the worst recession, and my job was restructured. I had to find new work and provide for my child along with funding her child care to allow me to work. So I have had it tough, but I feel my outcome has a lot to do with positive outlook and choices to press on despite circumstances. She also goes on to say, you know, she was a college graduate, things like that. A lot of moms don't fall into that category. And Sharon, you had talked about that, that we see service work going up, mm-hmm. but that's low income, and it's usually women.
Mm-hmm.
So what in the world do we do to change this paradigm? Sharon, I'd like to start with you just from that social psychology perspective.
Well, as Alana said, talking about the cultural shift certainly is part of the work that needs to be done. Also, thinking about the livable wage would address some of these things, bringing that closer proximity of cost of child care to the wages that are earned. And also, again, thinking about that comparable worth that, you know, there's many different jobs that need to be done, and we need to look at those pay structures and channeling all people into whatever job that they want to apply for instead of tracking them into a mommy track or a part-time track.
Mm-hmm. And Audrey, how would you answer that? Like what do you see needs to happen from your perspective, having been in the workforce for as long as you've been in the workforce?
Valuing all the work, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I think moms, depending on their situation, telling themselves it's okay, whatever the choices that they need to make, instead of trying to live to the standard of the perception that we think is out there, that society has set for us. I think moms operate a lot on guilt of, I didn't make it to the gym. I didn't have this 5-course meal. We had grilled cheese and top ramen, and that's maybe okay for tonight.
My kid had hot dogs last night.
Right? I had one of those days at work. We talk about energy level. Mm-hmm. I think some days at work, your mental energy is spent, and so what energy you have that night is going to be different. And telling yourself it's okay, and society being able to support moms and be okay with those decisions as well.
And how about, and maybe Alana and Sharon, you can answer this question, about women needing to use their voice more. And what I mean by that is that studies show that women aren't good at negotiating their wage. And we do say, oh, you'll give me flexibility. Okay, I'll take the flexibility. What do we need to do to move ourselves forward in this conversation as well?
I mean, that's a great question. I mean, again, there's a lot that can be done systemically.
Right.
But in terms of women being better advocates for themselves, you know, I'm a bit of an evangelist for Lean In by...
we were talking about
Sheryl Sandberg.
Sheryl Sandberg, right.
That really had a big impact on me. But I think, you know, there are, you know, I never want to get into blaming the victim here.
Right.
You know, if we take some measure of patriarchy as a given, there are certainly some self-defeating behaviors that, you know, women can be aware of and try to address. But, you know, I hate to take patriarchy as a given.
Right.
I'd like to tackle that as well.
So your point, though, then really comes back to our legislature and making changes at that state government level.
Yeah. I mean, there are general broad societal issues that are affecting the nation as a whole and maybe the world as a whole. And those are all very good and important things to address. But as a state legislator, I want to know why we're 50th. You know, because I don't know that those broader societal mores are more in play in Idaho than they are in other places. I think what's more in play in Idaho than other places are our policies and our laws and our systemic failure to invest in the systems that would allow working mothers to succeed.
And I have to wrap this conversation up. I know we could continue. I want to thank my guests, Alana Rubel, Sharon Patterson, and Audrey Eldridge. Thank you so much. And again, if you would like to look at that full study,